meeting please come to order? I'm going to start again for the benefit of the people who are on the telecon. This is a joint hearing of the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, the House Labor and Commerce Committee, and the Senate Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. First, I'd like to introduce, going around the table from the right over here, we have Representative Hurley, Representative Taylor, Representative Bowser, Representative Hanley, Representative Navarre, Senator Josephson, Senator Fahrenkamp, Representative Collins, and Representative Pierce. We are ready to start taking testimony on the two bills, sponsor substitute for House Bill 5, an act establishing an asbestos abatement program, and House Bill 57, making a supplemental appropriation for that purpose. It is now 4:38, and we have the two bills before us, I plan to take testimony first from the original sponsor of the bill last year, Senator Josephson, and then we have a number of people who have requested permission to testify from other points, including Anchorage and Fairbanks, and I believe we're patching into Ketchikan. They're online now, and we'll also take testimony here. Because this is a joint hearing, and there are a number of representatives and senators, and Representative David Thompson has just arrived. I'd like to note that for the record. We will limit testimony to 5 minutes apiece, approximately, and I'd like to hold all questions until the end so that we can be sure we get everyone's testimony in as much as possible. That's agreeable with the other two chairmen. Okay. First witness would be Senator Josephson. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Especially for the privilege of being your lead-off witness and for the rapidity of your action on this problem. I have submitted a written statement, which I'll just highlight because of the time constraints. I want to indicate that the issue of asbestos removal is a critical one, especially in the school. It's contained some information. Facilities of the state other than schools contain asbestos. There are NAP concerning the railroad facilities, for example. And I trust that in due order, that problem will be addressed by the state of Alaska as well.
But
I think children are right the first claim of our attention. First, because their attendance at school buildings is required by law. We make them go to school, and they have no alternative but
school.
Second, they are especially vulnerable to the health risk. Their life expectancy provides the 20 to 40 years develop asbestos-related diseases. Third, school activities by their nature may dislodge and disturb asbestos material. Such activities as someone throwing a ball into the gym or a ski or ski pole or hockey stick, contact with a wall, or asbestos materials becoming wet or damaged or disturbed by vandalism. And so school activities and the school place may be particular concerns in the question of asbestos removal. Fourth, I think we would all agree that our highest moral responsibility as a government is to the children that our society serves. And naturally, because asbestos removal is so costly, there are questions raised from time to time about whether there are reasonable alternatives to the removal of asbestos. But I think the packet which the committee has and which last year indicates that there are no quick fixes in this area. I would refer you to the state government news article by Lady Knapp, written last March at page 5, in which she says in part that experts warn that temporary measures make removal dangerous later on and must be constantly monitored. Also in the Journal of School Health, Leonard Stavisky writing in August 1982 that encapsulation, which involves the use of a sealant to cover the original asbestos material and to prevent further flaking, may not hold up for a long period of time, and the very act of applying a chemical covering may damage some of the asbestos. I also questioned Tom Freeman of the Anchorage School District just this morning to find out if, since the legislature met last year, there have been any technological changes which might avoid the necessity of asbestos removal. Mr. Freeman told me that there are no such developments. In fact, he has been in contact with school officials in Jefferson County, Missouri, where there was an encapsulation program that was carried out within the past several years. And they have advised him that the program was a failure and that they are now setting about to remove the asbestos. Another method which has been mentioned from time to time is structural containment, in which a permanent barrier is attempted to be built between the asbestos area and the public. In the schools in my district, in Anchorage, this would not be an acceptable methodology. The spaces between floors are used for electrical, plumbing, heating, and ventilation installations. In a building like Bartlett High School and other schools, workers need access to those areas behind the suspended ceilings to repair and check wiring, water leakage, and air circulation systems. The ventilation ducts carry asbestos particles from one area of the building to another. I'm grateful, Mr. Chairman, not only for your leadership, but also to Governor Sheffield, who in the FY 1986 budget has proposed an expenditure of $11 million for asbestos removal. But the scope of the problem in the schools is much greater than $11 million. The number one priority of the Anchorage School, the Anchorage Caucus, no, as presented to us at this session, is $11 million for the removal of asbestos in Anchorage schools alone. This amount has nothing, of course, to do with the needs in other areas of the state. The $11 million figure, by the way, is computed after the achievement of asbestos removal at West, East, and Diamond High Schools, which was accomplished this summer, and at Clark Junior High School in Anchorage. It does not take into account the $18 million asbestos removal program at Bartlett High School. Anchorage has received $10 million of state money for the Bartlett Asbestos Removal Program, and because of a unique quirk that part of the Bartlett High School building is on federal land, Anchorage, through the efforts of Senator Stevens, will receive another $6 million from the United States government, a contribution to the cost of removing asbestos at Bartlett. But asbestos removal in Anchorage is a 55-school obligation, and we've only just begun. Turning to the legislation itself, it does appear that Section 1, allowing the Commissioner of Education to designate a shorter school term, may no longer be necessary. Section 1 was prepared last year in the Senate Hess Committee after the Attorney General advised the Commissioner that existing statutes did not give the Commissioner of Education authority to relax the statutory 180-day school term requirement for purposes of asbestos removal. At that time, the Department of Law's rationale was that while waivers might be granted in cases of emergency under state law, the installation of asbestos in the first place was a human-caused decision, not a natural emergency such as an earthquake or a flood. Since then, the Commissioner has been allowed by the Attorney General to relax the 180-day school term requirement in the case of Bartlett High School, and witnesses will explain to you that they are now going to be going on a longer day so that they will wind up their activities in April, take a long summer break, start late in October in 1985 so that they will have the contractors will have access to the building for many more days. But the Attorney General has allowed the Commissioner, as I said, to relax that requirement for Bartlett High School without changing the statute. Apparently, the Department of Law has changed its position, and therefore, Section 1 is not necessary. I do strongly believe in Section 2. Although you will hear testimony against it, and in fact, a paper I note from the Associated America, one dimension of the asbestos problem that I haven't mentioned is the extent of the danger to workers. According to the National Cancer Institute, between 1.6 and 2.15 million American workers will die from exposure to cancer-causing asbestos, and another 3 million more will suffer non-cancerous but fatal asbestosis. In your packets is the article by Kathleen McCormick in the American School Board Journal, which warns, written in April 1984, the removal process itself is an extremely dangerous undertaking. A faulty or incomplete removal job could present even greater health hazards to writing to school board members, as well as to asbestos abatement workers. I have confidence that the school district at Anchorage, because of the availability there as an urban center of competing contractors with asbestos removing experience, and because of the size and sophistication in contract management, is making sure that workers who remove asbestos are trained and qualified, supervised. But in all frankness, I'm not equally confident about other areas of the state. Last year, this committee, the House Committee, heard eyewitness testimony from Nick Holtram, who will be testifying, I understand, later from Fairbanks tonight, that Alaska workers handling asbestos on the job sites around the state careless methods which reflect a want of training. I regard Mr. Holtram, who has a long career in worker safety causes, as an expert in this matter, and I'm concerned, as he is and as you are, and I'm also concerned about being sure that when asbestos removal jobs are done, they're done thoroughly and completely, and that our children receive the protection that we're paying for. I think it's important, Mr. Chairman, that provisions of the bill creating statutory duties of school officials to comply with EPA regulations be enacted into law under Section 2 of the bill. At last report in the 13th legislature, we were told that only about half of Alaska's school districts had inventoried their facilities to determine the presence of asbestos as part of EPA's national requirement that schools be inspected for asbestos hazards, and that schools keep records of the inspection results and notify parents and employees if asbestos is found. This is a very slow-paced response to EPA and is unacceptable to me, and I would favor mandatory state legislation that I think is needed and overdue. Mr. Chairman, I wish again to commend you and your committee for your prompt action to consider the asbestos issue in our schools. Surely this is one problem that must be addressed even in this time of relative constraint in state budgeting. We have been through the campaign, as all House members were in 1984, can vouch for the fact that our constituents are concerned about asbestos. And if Alaska cannot afford to remove asbestos in the schools, what state can? Our thoroughgoing action now will save hundreds or thousands of Alaska youngsters from disability and untimely death over the next several decades. The resources of the local school districts are not adequate to the problem, and Alaskans are looking here in Juneau to the legislature for a solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Next, we have some witnesses. Next, we have some witnesses who will be testifying from out of Juneau. And the first witness I'd like to call is Lan Marley from Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If I might, while Lan is coming to the mic, I'd like to report to you that two members of my committee, Senator Sturdzielewski and Senator DeVries, are in another teleconference and will be joining us very shortly.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd also like to note for the record the presence of Representative Pettijohn. Is that witness, Lan Marley, available to testify?
I already mentioned that Representative Thompson is here.
Juneau? We don't seem to have that testifier at this point. Would you go to the next person on the list, please?
Is Tom Freeman of Anchorage available to testify? Yes, would you please commence?
My name is Tom Freeman. I'm assistant superintendent with the Anchorage School District, and I was here to testify about the bill, and mainly in support of the $11 million that would be coming to Anchorage. At the present time, we have surveyed the school district, and we have done so since 1979 when the EPA records first came out. At that time, they did require that we post each school and also have a record of where the asbestos was at that time. Since that time, the school board appointed a committee that had an extensive survey done of the entire school district, and the school district hired a firm out of Nashville, Tennessee, by the name of Gobble, Hayes, and Pickering. And the reason they were selected is because they had done over 500 schools previously, and they'd also done over 100 other buildings, such as hospitals and other city buildings. And since this happened, we did find out that we had some 55 schools in the district that had some sort of asbestos. Most of it, however, other than Bartlett, was in locations that, such as boiler rooms, and piping and things like this. But we did have some other serious work in West, East, and Diamond that was removed, as Senator Josephson did mention. Since that time, we have found extensive, of course, a lot of money is involved in this, and but which brings us up to the point now of where we're at, and that's with Bartlett High School. Bartlett has a contract out right now, $14.8 million, to remove the existing asbestos in the school. Bartlett High School is 324,000 square feet, but has some 550,000 square feet of asbestos, which is sprayed on throughout the entire school. As of this time, the contract will commence on April 15th. We have Monday night, we will let two more contracts. One contract is to a mover, which has exactly 10 days to move all the contents from that school into a storage and to allow the contractor to start his removal on April 29th. The same contractor will also remove the material back into the school on October 15th when the asbestos has been removed, and he has 10 days in which to do so before school starts. Now, including to this point, we have had to talk with parents, we have talked with the students, of course, all the people that have worked or have anything to do with Bartlett. In the latter of this, we had to make arrangements with all our unions. We have 8 unions within the school district. We've had to make arrangements with the teachers' union. We've had to make arrangements with the retirement system so they would not be penalized because they will not be working their 180 days as required by the statute, but only working 150 days. And so we had to make certain guarantees that they would be paid and compensated on the same basis that they would be for 180 days if they work 150 days. We had to add 90 minutes onto each school day so that the kids or the children will get their full amount, the equivalent to 180 days of school, which means starting in January, the second semester, they will start their 90 minutes longer, which also requires working with all our bus contracts to extend the route and hiring extra buses because now they can't make their original routes that they used to make in order to make all the other activities. The other point is that starting in October, they will also be going 90 minutes, and this will go through next January in 1986. And that way they'll make up all the equivalency of their time of school. We also have to rent a building for 9 months, which starts in February, and that will cost us an additional $175,000 because we have to have some place for the administration of the Bartlett High School while the removal is taking place. And so they will start moving sometime in February, and also we have to have the storage necessary for all their equipment and all their supplies that will be coming in before the school starts next year. Also, when you have 2,000 children that are coming for registration, we have to have someplace large enough where they can hold their registration, and also we'll have to be conducted some classes during the summer for some of the students that will have to have some extra help, or any new students that happen to come in and get caught in between, because if they happen to be new to the district, such as the military, they may not, they would have to make up this difference that they will lose at the beginning of next year. And so this is one reason why we're kind of fearful of the bill that may be restrictive, and we have so much invested at this time in Bartlett High School, we would hate to see anything happen to it or that would possibly interfere, because everything is on such a tight time limit. We have 10 days to completely remove it. We have 150 days to completely remove the asbestos from the school. Then we have another 10 days at the end to completely move back into the school and be ready to start school again. And I think this is our main reason why we are kind of apprehensive that some of the restrictions, or if the bill was passed as it is, that would require the Department of Labor possibly to go out and make, to set up a plan, and consequently we will be caught right in the middle with all of these contracts that are now in existence. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Freeman. The next witness, and once again, we'd like the witnesses to limit themselves, if possible, to 5 minutes, and I'd like to hold questions at least. I'll try to allow a half hour of questions at the end if we don't finish with all the witnesses, because I want to be sure that we have time to examine these witnesses who do testify. But I'd like to limit testimony to 5 minutes if possible. Next witness is Ms. Carla Josephson. Is Carla Josephson there?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Carla Josephson. I am here representing Carol Como, president of the Anchorage Education Association, who needed to attend another meeting. She asked me to come to express the support of the association for this legislation. I am a librarian at Bartlett High School here in Anchorage. My workday, as of yesterday, extends from 6:15 in the morning to 3:45 in the afternoon. On April 27th, I will leave Bartlett along with the rest of the staff and the students, not to return again until the 12th of October, having seen to the packing of 3,000 volumes in the library and some 6 years' worth of magazines. It's my understanding the library will be completely stripped, including the carpet. We will return on October 12th to find 500,000 some feet of asbestos having been removed. This may be the largest asbestos removal project in the world, certainly one of the largest. Bartlett staff and students will not enjoy the same holiday schedule as the rest of the school district throughout the rest of this year, nor through and throughout the total following year. We will return to the extended day in the fall semester. We will close the following school year in June of 86 with as many minutes of instructional time as will have occurred in the other high schools in Anchorage. I'm here to tell you that although we expect this to have its hard moments, we believe with careful planning that it can be done, and done with less disruption to the school schedule than is suggested by other plans. I am not a scientist. I suppose you will have testimony from those who will speak to that. Our staff became convinced of a potential hazard of considerable proportions at Bartlett. We were told there is no safe level of exposure to this material, and that young people are particularly susceptible to its effects. There was also no trouble convincing us that buildings which house 1,800 teenagers take hard and sometimes unusual wear, not to mention the normal wear and tear on buildings in earthquake country. Finally, we believe that people who remove asbestos must be well trained for the specific task. That removal not properly done is more dangerous than leaving the asbestos where it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Josephson. Next testimony, testifier is Pat Smuts. Is Pat Smuts available to testify?
This is Pat Smuts. I'm representing the Alaska State AFL-CIO. The Alaska AFL-CIO is totally in favor of the abatement of asbestos in all public and private places, especially in schools where children could be constantly subjected friable asbestos. Another strong concern of ours is the health and safety of the workers removing the asbestos. We feel that the proper training and certification of the workers not only would help ensure their own health and safety, but also the health of the workers' families and the community surrounding the contaminated area. If it only takes one fiber of asbestos to start a disease, then that's too much for an individual or a child to subject. That's basically all I have, and in closing, I just want to thank the prime sponsors and the co-sponsors of these two bills for acting on something that has been long overdue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smuts. Next testifier is William Schneider. Is Mr. Schneider there?
Contractors of America, AGC, and we are here today representing more than 900 companies, including most of the general contracting companies engaged in Alaska's commercial construction. The AGC agrees with the intention of this bill, the abatement of asbestos health hazards. Many AGC contractors are or have been involved in this very important safety effort. There is, however, a section of the bill that unnecessarily duplicates existing safety regulations and should should therefore be separated from this bill. Specifically, we draw your attention to Section 1820.030, Certification Program. In this section, the Department of Labor is given authority to certify contractors and employees who intend to conduct asbestos abatement. What the bill essentially requires is a state license to do asbestos work. But is there a need for such a license? We think not. There are literally thousands of potentially hazardous substances that are handled safely in today's workplace. Asbestos should not be treated any differently than those substances. Another serious concern that needs to be addressed is that of liability. Asbestos work, as many of you know, is plagued with lawsuits. Through the proposed Department of Labor certification program, the state may become party to these suits by certifying that contractors, employees, and labor organizations are competent to undertake this work. The state may have liability if an employer or employee or organization, such as labor organization, is certified improperly. We suggest an opinion from the Attorney General's office be obtained prior to the passage of this section from the committee. Finally, in examining the fiscal requirements of this proposed licensing program, it appears that millions of dollars would be needed rather than the proposed $300,000. It is virtually impossible to competently administer the proposals contained in HB 5 for $300,000. We suggest that an inadequately administered program is worse than no program at all. A realistic fiscal note must be developed so that the lawmakers may assess the true cost of proposed legislation. We believe once the true cost of this program is known, the question will arise, what does a certification program provide that is not already enforceable under the existing Dodge General Safety Code regulations? The answer is nothing. Sufficient asbestos health standards exist already, including requirements for employer training and proper respirator usage. In conclusion, we suggest this committee to thoroughly determine the fiscal cost of the proposed legislation, including potential state liability, and to balance that cost against the benefits received. AGC contends that for the certification program, the dollar cost will be high, and there's no benefit because sufficient asbestos health standards presently exist. We strongly urge that the licensing section of SSHB 5 be separated from the remainder of the bill so that the serious issues that we have raised here today may be properly addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider. Next witness is Mark Kaplan. Is Mr. Kaplan available?
Mr. Chairman, both Mark Kaplan and I, David Wigglesworth, will be testifying, and our testimonies will be brief.
Are you Mr. Kaplan?
No, my name is David Wigglesworth. We are both representing the Alaska Health Project.
I see. Please commence.
Okay, thank you. Alaska Health Project appreciates the opportunity to testify in support of HB 57 and SS HB 5, an act establishing a health hazard abatement program. Historically, asbestos insulation and products found its way into Alaska in the 1950s. The Cassiar mines in British Columbia generated and treated an average of about 390,000 tons of asbestos. And in the late 50s, in around 1959, much of it found its way into Alaska by rail through Skagway. As we see now, much of the Cassiar and other asbestos has found its way into many of our public and private buildings in Alaska. Fortunately, the debates concerning the health hazards associated with this phenomena are for the most part over, and now we've turned to our attention toward the problem of managing and controlling these exposures, a subject which the Alaska Health Project receives numerous inquiries each month, which Mark will elaborate on. My name is Mark Kaplan. I'm an industrial hygienist with the Alaska Health Project. We have a service called Hazardous Materials Information Service where we take requests from the public on various occupational health hazards. Asbestos is the issue we receive the most requests on. Approximately 15% of our requests come about because of concerns about asbestos. 30% of those come from workers or unions. 30% come from employers, and the remaining 40% come from members of the community or they're unidentified. Just as anecdotes, as to the concern that we see about asbestos in this state and asbestos removal training. We receive calls from workers asking about doing asbestos removal work, and they'd like to know what sort of training should they have. And when we explain what we would like to see as good training for an asbestos worker, they simply tell us, well, I can just go down to X contractor and don't have to do much at all and just start working. And what you say sounds like a lot of work. On the same token, we receive calls from small contractors who'd like to get into asbestos removal work, and we give them the same answer when they ask us, what do you see should be done with asbestos removal and training? And they then ask about the current laws and regulations and what actually is required. And we have to tell them that what we are recommending often goes far beyond what current regulations and laws require. And unfortunately, they say they're in a situation where they have to competition with other contractors, and unless they're all having to meet the same law or regulation, so they're going to be spending, they're going to put in a bid that's too high, and they're not going to get to work. So there's an incentive for them not to do that. So these are two examples of the types of calls that we get from workers and from employers in the state on asbestos removal. I think they show us the need for having some sort of uniform, good training of workers and employers and a certification program. I'll return it now to David. The proposed legislation goes a long way to protecting school children, school personnel, and the public frequenting these institutions. Further, and perhaps most important, and what Mark was elaborating to, is this call for the creation of an employee training certification program, and requiring that only those employees who have completed such a program be employed to abate asbestos health hazards in the state. This portion of proposed legislation is central to the prevention of future asbestos-related diseases to Alaskan workers. Due to the fact that current federal standards permit workers to be legally exposed to standards which are known to cause asbestos-related diseases, it is vitally important that Alaskan workers be trained to protect themselves from exposure to asbestos and understand the nature and inherent dangers of asbestos removal and demolition in hopes of keeping their exposure and the public's to an absolute minimum. Other states such as Colorado and New Jersey are developing such asbestos abatement programs, which include worker and also contractor training certification programs, and the Alaska Health Project urges the Alaska legislature to follow suit and adopt the proposed legislation we are discussing today. Thank you.
Does that complete the testimonies of Mr. Catlin and Mr. Wigglesworth?
That completes our testimony. Thank you.
Thank you both.
That completes everybody's testimony who originally signed up in Anchorage. Next site is Fairbanks, and I understand Mary Kennington of the Department of Labor is there to testify.
Is that correct?
No, that is not correct, but we do have two to testify.
Who are they, please?
George Riley from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Mick Botram.
Mary Kennington is not testifying then, is that correct?
That's correct.
Is Mr. Riley available to testify?
Yes, he is.
Please commence.
Hello, I'm George Riley. I'm the Director of Environmental Health and Safety for the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I've been involved in concerns with asbestos removal, particularly on our campus. We're in the process of surveying all our buildings to identify where it might be located. I'm very pleased to see this bill come up, and I fully support House Bill 5, particularly Section 1828.030, which speaks to our concern for protection of workers. I think that licensing and certification is essential for state control and local accountability. Governor's Safety Conference this past year, Dr. Ken Cohen, the Industrial Health Safety Consultant, spoke to the question of asbestos removal versus encapsulation and some other methods. And I've been watching this closely for a number of years. It seems many communities respond almost in a frightening way to the concern for asbestos in school. And many of the stories you may have in your packet there about the asbestos count in the air after a hasty removal are accurate. There's been problems all over the country with, fortunately, the contractors have become better skilled. Techniques have improved greatly in the past year. So have the products available for encapsulation. We saw a recent demonstration here in Fairbanks of one new product that seemed to do an excellent job of penetrating encapsulating asbestos containing materials. And we do have a concern here for how cost-effective our response to risk abatement is. Dr. Ken Cohen made the case clearly for me, and I tend to agree with him, that more often than not, control, encapsulation, and monitoring air sampling is a much more cost-effective way to abate the risk of asbestos-containing building material than is removal. And yet it seems like removal is the first response everyone has to have. And in looking at who we have consulted with around the country, once you look at how we deal with asbestos materials in our schools, I see a number of people with experience from various school districts, but very few people with credentials in industrial hygiene and safety. And I'd like to suggest that we take another look at who's available in this field, who's considered nationally expert in this field, and perhaps consult with them before we make the decision between removal and escalation. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Before we continue, I'd like to note for the record the presence of Senator DeVries. And I'd just like to inquire, is Ketchikan on the line now? I gather Ketchikan's not on the line then, and we will complete the final witness from Fairbanks, Mr. Mick Hotram. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. I'm Mick Hotram. I'm the safety representative for the Alaska State District Council. Contractors with so many different types of training programs, and most of them not satisfactory and will not work, there must be a certification.
Thank you, Mr. Hotram. Next, we have two witnesses from Juneau. Mr. Richard Arab, are you here?
My name is Richard Arab. I'm the Deputy Director for Labor Standards and Safety with the Department.
Would you please start again now that we're on the air and people in the rest of the state can hear you, sir?
Yes, I'm Richard Arab. I'm the Deputy Director for Division of Labor Standards and Safety with the Department of Labor, and I'm in charge of the Occupational Safety and Health Program. The department, I believe you got our position paper and our fiscal note. As we state in our position paper, we are in favor of this bill. I'd like to talk a little bit about the certification program. We feel that is very important because the certification program will not only assure that the employees are trained in the safe and helpful handling of asbestos, but it will also assure that any tear out or encapsulation is done properly, which will protect school children and public. As we see the certification program as written in this bill, we see it that we would be certifying the employer's or the union's program, and we wouldn't be certifying individual employees, and that would be up to the employer or the union to certify them, and that we would be just looking at their plans. Also, as we see the certification and the scope of this bill, the certification would only cover those employers or unions that are working in public buildings and not in the private sector. I do not know if this is the intent of the legislation or not. We have two reservations or two concerns about this legislation. First, again, back to the certification program, we would like to see an effective date of at least 90 days after the bill becomes law, because it requires us to develop guidelines and write regulations to carry out the certification program. The other concern we have is that although we realize that a lot of the schools have been surveyed, that the EPA regulation simply requires a visual check of the school buildings to determine if there's asbestos. And our concern is that it would depend a great deal on who did that visual check. And perhaps some asbestos materials were not identified during those surveys. And that's my testimony. I do have Dr. Annette Thorne with me, who's the Medical Director for Occupational Health, and she'll be here to answer any questions that have to do with the medical aspects of asbestos during the question and answer period. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The last witness before I'll take questions is Mr. Scott Heidelman. Mr. Heidelman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Heidelman. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Environmental Lobby. The Alaska Environmental Lobby is a coalition of statewide conservation groups with a combined membership of over 5,000 Alaskans. For the last several years, the environmental lobby has been concerned with the environmental effects of toxic substances on people in the workplace, at home, as a hazardous waste in the town dump or an abandoned lot, and as in this case, in the school. Toxic substances like asbestos threaten the quality of the human environment. Dealing with this toxic threat at the legislative level is often a frustrating process. Now, in one specific area, asbestos in Alaska schools, we have the opportunity to clean up once and for all a part of that toxic threat. The health hazard abatement program outlined in this bill will eventually eliminate asbestos health hazards in our schools. The certification program will ensure that it will be done safely. In short, the sponsor substitute for House Bill 5 is a positive.
A number of senators and representatives here, I propose going around the table and taking people in order, starting with Representative Hurley. Representative Pettijohn. Representative Taylor. You can direct them to any of the witnesses who have testified thus far.
Did I understand one of the people testifying indicated Project Presently projected, Project Presently ongoing and projected for the one school in Anchorage, Bartlett, is the largest project of its type going on now in the country?
Yes, you did.
Did I also understand that just one fiber is the medical testimony that, that someone indicated they'd heard? One fiber can be dangerous to the health? Okay. If we've known about this problem for over 2 years in Anchorage, why are we forcing these kids to spend another 90 minutes each day in a school that we realize to be very dangerous when they can suck in one fiber? Shouldn't those kids be out of that school? That's my first question. The superintendent, I believe, who testified, but I guess he's taking care of the school business there first. In other words, there must be some known, assumable risk that someone has contemplated here and made a decision on in keeping those children in that facility, number one. Number two, I'd like to know what the appraised value of Bartlett High School is. Somebody here wants to spend close to $32 million on this facility. Is it worth more than $32 million, or shouldn't we destroy it and build another one cleanly rather than waste it on an older building when all we're going to do is take the asbestos out and really not improve the structure? Thank you.
Are you directing those questions to Mr. Freeman and Ms. Josephson from Anchorage?
That'd be fine. I think the senator could probably respond to them.
Well, I also think Representative Hanley would be able to help, but my recollection was, in regard to the second question, that Bartlett High School was over a $36 million facility. And, of course, I'd also say that, as I mentioned, $6 million of the abatement costs will come from the federal government. So that was looked at. I know that was looked at by the school district, and the value of the facility is exceeds the cost of a cleanup.
Did that answer both of your questions?
No, I didn't answer the second question because I don't. The first question, because I don't know the answer to that as to who assessed the risk and what degree of risk there was and why the kids are still there. Since my daughter attends Bartlett High School, I'd like to know the answer myself.
Possibly those questions should be addressed to Mr. Freeman and or Ms. Josephson in Anchorage. Would either of you witnesses care to answer that question?
This is Tom Freeman, and the first question, the building is safe. Because we do have air monitoring, and we take samples at all times, so we're assured that there is safeness in the schools. Otherwise, we would not allow anybody to go into schools at all. Second question is, the estimate for the school is probably right around $45 million. The next question I believe you asked was, the amount of money that we are putting into the school district. The Anchorage School District is filing suit against the ones who are the manufacturing and hoping to recover some of the money that we have spent. When this is recovered, we hope to be able to prorate it back to whoever gave us money, mainly the state and the school district and the federal government.
Did that answer your questions completely?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had one other. One of the witnesses from Fairbanks testified that encapsulation techniques have improved along with the ability of the products that would be placed on them. Has encapsulation with this new technology been contemplated as opposed to removal?
I think as sponsor of the bill, the answer to that is yes, and I would refer you to that section of the bill on page 2, lines 5 and 6, which basically the program applies to all work involving demolition, removal, encapsulation, salvage, transportation, disposal, storage, and containment of asbestos products, and also as well in subsection 2 there, the construction, alteration, repair, maintenance, or renovation conducted in environments that contain asbestos. As sponsor of the bill, it's my specific intent that it covers all forms of dealing with asbestos. Representative Boucher.
Obviously, where our children are concerned, it's going to have a very high priority. But I'm wondering, what about all of the public buildings? If we're talking about $26 million here, you're going to be talking about hospitals, public facilities. For example, is there any asbestos in this Capitol building here now? Have we looked at that? We may have a, this may just be the tip of the iceberg on are we handling it on looking at all public facilities?
This is, once again, I would, as sponsor here, refer you to the portion of the bill on page 2, line 3. And the bill applies to, it's the purpose is to eliminate asbestos health hazards in schools in the state. It's not applied to private buildings or to other public buildings. This is a specific program dealing with the schools. And the reason I intended to limit it in this manner was because we have limited funds, and it's going to be tough to get the funds even for this program. Obviously, there are problems in other public buildings here, but as a practical matter, we are concerned about dealing with the schools first, and then that would be at least a potential subject for a subsequent legislation. We just can't do everything. We don't have the funds, I don't think. Maybe the committee might agree, but that was the intent, at least with the draft that's in front of us.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would again refer the representative to the correspondence dated May 29, 1984 from Commissioner Knapp discussing the very issue of asbestos in facilities of the state.
I hadn't had an opportunity to do that.
I understand. And a lot of that letter deals with the railroad facilities, the need to decontaminate rail cars and railroad facilities.
Representative Pettishaw?
I'd like to have a question for Mr. Freeman in Anchorage. Could you give us some idea of the cost involved in monitoring the air quality at this school, which has given you this assurance that there is no, absolutely no health hazard at the present time in that school? How much is that costing, like, on an annual basis?
At the present time, I don't have the figures what it's costing us right now, but I guess the, I can't even tell you what the total cost was, but we made over some 800 air samples that we have made throughout the entire school district, and most of them I'm sure would be probably at Bonnet itself. I can't recall right now, but it's in the thousands of dollars of the cost to do this. I don't have the exact figure, Representative Pettyjohn, but we are watching it constantly all the time, and just because of the dangers involved.
Well, just to follow up, of the 800-odd samples of air that you've taken, how many showed up dangerous or any levels of asbestos in the air?
Not what you call dangerous in any of the schools, but it is there. And
was it in the air?
The point that as long as it's there, it could be dangerous. And none of the schools that we have right now are unsafe. They're all safe.
Because then why are we spending all this money?
There is not asbestos in the air, but the schools do contain asbestos.
Well, I understand that, but just from a purely layman standpoint and not being one who's privy to any expert scientific knowledge on this, but it would seem to me that if you're satisfied that your monitoring procedures are protecting the health and safety of those children at the present time, what is to prevent you to continue that program and saving the state about $20 or $30 million?
That's possible that you could, and although the buildings are getting older, at any time, but any part that's disturbed, it becomes a part of the air, it's never destroyed, and it could be there. And one person coming along breathing that one very minute particle could endanger their lives.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to be in an argument with Mr. Friedman.
And they know the dangers of it.
But I would just make one point, if I might, Mr. Chairman, then you can go on to the next questioner. But it would seem to me that, again, from a purely layman standpoint, that when you spend this amount of money on a health hazard, which is a potential health hazard, you might be able to save more lives and do more good for the public health, addressing actual health hazards that exist at the present time.
Continuing with questions, Mr. Boucher, any more?
I guess you open up a can of worms when you begin to decide whose health is affected, you know. I'm just concerned that we're not taking a look at just the asbestos program. Certainly I have a deep concern, but this is, I think, the tip of the iceberg. I just wanted to address that. What is the ultimate cost of it?
Representative Hanley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to begin by saying that I do support the idea that you have put forth in this bill, and that my experience on the Anchorage School Board did acquaint me with the problem of asbestos, so that I am glad to be a part of the effort here in Juneau to effectively deal with that problem. I had a question for Mr. Freeman of the Anchorage School District. Did I understand, Mr. Freeman, that the school district feels that the certification portion of the bill could adversely affect the Bartlett High School abatement project?
Representative Hanley, the parts that I was concerned about, of course, are the time restrictions that were placed on it, since we do have so many contracts that were on a strictly very tight time to get this abatement program started. The other part that I'm not sure of, and that was the part on the certification, if that requires that, for example, any place we have asbestos, does that mean that we have to have every worker that we have that works for the school district certified in asbestos training or asbestos removal? And that was the part I wasn't sure of. I don't believe I testified to that part, though.
What effect, Mr. Freeman, do you think that this bill would have if the bill did go into effect, say, between April and September of 1985?
Well, if we have to wait for a certain plan, I believe we would probably be in trouble. Because right now we do have a contractor. In the getting a contractor, we did go to the pre-qualified method. We had a nationwide search just to get the designer. We had a nationwide search to get somebody who had experience in handling asbestos, either in encapsulation of some form or in removal. And so we feel that we do have an adequate program, and we do feel that the contractor itself, BFM, and the contractor is responsible for the monitoring, as well as the administrator, which is Gothel Hayes and Fixer. They'll also be the administrators of the contract and handling all the air samples and testing to ensure that it's done correct.
Could I ask a question also of Mr. Bill Schneider, who is in Anchorage, the Alaska General Contractors representative? Mr. Schneider, are you familiar with the new toxic and hazardous substance law, which covers employee safety education programs and related topics?
Yes, I am.
Do you feel that that law is adequate to deal with the problems of asbestos removal, and can you tell us why?
I don't believe that particular piece of legislation is the one that I would refer you to in terms of the asbestos requirements. I would refer you more to subchapter 4, and I'm looking through my papers here, subchapter 40102, asbestos, and that is currently in the state standards, and that specifically is a chapter that deals with asbestos and turning the methods of compliance, definitions, work practices, personal protective equipment, emergencies, change room, laundering facilities, use of respirators, environmental monitoring, personal monitoring, caution signs, etc. I would say that probably for those people that are familiar with asbestos work, that would be the section that would adequately address asbestos abatement.
How many asbestos abatement projects have AGC member companies already been involved with?
There would be several. I wouldn't have the exact number for you here, but there are several projects, not only for public work, but private work as well.
And if it were possible for either the AGC or its member companies to set up employee safety education programs to get their workers certified under this particular bill, do you feel that AGC members would want to do that?
To have a specific training program, yes, they would support that. The problem, of course, if you look at the language under the bill, of course, is not written that way. The way the bill is written is of course, that the Department of Labor will receive receive training programs from every organization, contractor, or employee group, and then, of course, they will develop guidelines for either assuring that that is either adequate or not adequate. Of course, if you look now at the way the bill is written, not only would you have the possibility of 150 to 200 contractors involved in the various abatement work, but then you also have several organizations in the state, the labor organizations, you'd also have the training groups, and also particularly you would have the school districts. You have about 55 school districts in the state that would also have to submit a training program. So in total, I think you'd be looking at anywhere from 275 to 300 organizations that would all have to submit a training program to the Department of Labor that they would certify as being competent. I think that that's probably not the most efficient way to go. My recommendations in those lines would be to have the Department of Labor put together a training program, and then everybody would comply with that. But that's not the way this bill is written. And that's, here again, why we suggest that there's a lot more homework to be done on the certification section and that it be separated from the remainder of the bill.
Thank you.
Representative Copeland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several, three questions. One answered by Anchorage or by the Labor Department. What levels of airborne asbestos were found, if any, after removal of asbestos from some of the projects, such as West, East, and Diamond? Is there any information on that? In other words, was removal effective in that regard? I presume there was monitoring, since there was monitoring beforehand. I'm interested in the encapsulation argument. The second question, and I...
Yes, this is Tom Finn again, and yes, they were successful at these schools, and the monitoring specifications that were put in the contract, I can't remember the exact, or what the EPA guidelines are, I guess, but whatever it is, it's about 100 or 1,000 times less than what they have. So it's quite extensive beyond the requirements of the EPA.
Thank you. So that it did work. Good. That was the question. Okay,
the... The other thing on Representative Petty's John, I did mention that Senator Joseph did, at Bartlett High School, the entire air plenum, that there was the whole air that goes through the school is completely sprayed. All the steel beams in this section are sprayed with asbestos. And so every bit of air is constantly being circulated throughout the entire school all the time.
That's in answer to a previous question. Probably this one would be to the AGC representative or to the health and safety officer of the union. We have figures here that indicate that at least within the last decade, the current rate of asbestos-related illness among asbestos workers...
Moderator Anchorage, are we still online?
Yes, sorry, I got the wrong one. The information that we have in the folder indicates that among asbestos workers, the death rate due to cancer was 45% of all of the asbestos workers, which is a fairly high indication. I'm of the dangers of asbestos. I'm interested in what has happened since these statistics, which I believe are older statistics, have been gotten. Has the situation improved? In other words, has the realization of the danger and the use of the newer procedures improved the situation? If there is an improvement industry-wide or only found among workers who work in certified programs? I realize it's a fairly technical question, but I just like to see that data sometimes. Got it at their fingertips.
Does anybody there have an answer like the Alaska Health Project? Any of you folks have an answer?
George Riley here in Fairbanks. One of the problems with asbestos-related diseases is they take 20 to 30 years to develop. It's only been within the last few years that there's been some accountability and some positive steps towards protecting the workers in the workplace. So hard data in that direction would be somewhat scarce.
You're right, and I take your comment. Dr. Thorne, would you like to come up here? Comment.
For the record, ma'am, please state your name.
I'm Dr. Annette Thorne. I'm medical director of.
Why don't you start again now that we're on here?
I'm Dr. Annette Thorne. I'm medical director of occupational health for the Alaska Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. And my specialty is occupational medicine and toxicology. In response to your question, we do not have any new epidemiologic studies. For example, in school children have been exposed to the lower levels of asbestos in school buildings. We do, however, have very good data on incidence of mesotheliomas, which is a lung cancer on the lining of the chest wall, in children in households where the father was an asbestos worker and brought small amounts of fibers home on their clothing. Those children 30, 40 years later have developed cancer of the lining of the wall of the chest called mesothelioma. And it is considered that they were exposed to very small quantities. This is our best evidence at this point in time that the levels that we currently have on the books in our codes for exposure to asbestos are really not protecting the working population or the school population from significant exposure and risk of lung cancer or mesothelioma.
Thank you, Dr. Thorne.
Representative Navarre. Senator Joseph.
Doctor, while you're here, first of all, Mr. Chairman, it's a pleasure to be back and debating with my friend Fritz Pettyjohn again. I thank you for giving me that forum and giving him that forum.
The record should reflect that you're both smiling.
The question was asked about the monitoring, by monitoring air quality, and Mr. Freeman in Anchorage said that the schools are safe because we're measuring air quality and we don't find a problem. As a parent, my concern would be the school might be safe today and unsafe tomorrow. Could you comment about how much comfort or lack of comfort we can get from such monitoring programs?
I think that I would share the responsibility in answering this with a certified industrial hygienist like Mark Catlin with the Alaska Health Project. From a statistical standpoint, sampling, he might be helpful. But from a health standpoint, it's clear that any disruption of asbestos that may be on a ceiling. I have heard through John Madaw, the state epidemiologist who worked on that committee to evaluate the need for asbestos removal at Bartlett, that those ceiling spaces were being climbed into by students who were not necessarily always within the letter of the law of the school, that repairs have to be done in that ceiling space that does disrupt the asbestos. Once asbestos is entrained in the air of a building, it remains vulnerable to be re-entrained at another point in time. One point of time may not give significant quantities of asbestos in your analysis results. At another point of time, it might be there. The other point is that there is really no such thing as a negative sample for asbestos in most buildings in this country. Because of our profuse use of the asbestos throughout the country, we really do have positive samples in most office buildings, usually on the level of about 0.04 fibers per cubic centimeter. Now, this is not measurable by the most current technique, which is the phase contrast microscopy technique, which only measures fibers down to 5 microns in length. It also does not measure below 0.13 fibers per cubic centimeter, given the way that current sampling is done, which is usually a two-hour sample. So that if the samples were done after the removal using state-of-the-art technology, which would have been perhaps an 8-hour sample using phase contrast microscopy, or using electron microscopy with X-ray diffraction identification of the asbestos fibers, perhaps we might have a better sense of actually how much is there.
Senator DeBries?
This is Mark Chatwin from the Alaska Health Project.
Yes, sir.
We need to keep a sense of the analytical methods that we use and the sampling methods, and that was, as Dr. Thorne was mentioning, if you look at the current occupational health standard, which is 2 fibers per cubic centimeter, average over 8 hours a day exposure is considered acceptable. If you average that out, times the volume of air that an average person might breathe, you're looking at someone being exposed to 15 million fibers. If you go around down to some of the very best analytical techniques that we have, we're looking at what we consider below detectable limits, we're still looking at it in the range of 700,000 fires that someone would be using in a single day. So the analytical methods are still evolving. They're much better today than they were 2, 4, 5 years ago, but we still have a long way to go. So it's difficult to say that, you know, given the theory that most scientists agree with, that any exposure could potentially cause a disease like cancer. And we're talking about not even being able to measure exposure, in the range of 100,000 fibers per day. So there's also a level of uncertainty we have to consider. I'd like to address the issue of the current health standards, the current federal asbestos standard for workers. Most of the provisions that Mr. Schneider mentioned in that standard are set off by the fact that workers must be overexposed according to the standard, which means exposed to more than 2 fibers per cc over an 8-hour working day. That's a very, very high level of exposure currently. Very fortunately also, there is work at the federal level currently at reducing the fiber level that workers would be exposed to. Currently, most of the standards that are currently enforceable, really, the provisions do not go into effect until fiber levels are very, very high. And most of those fiber levels, 2 fibers per cc, are very, very rarely over. Workers are very rarely overexposed to that level here in the state of Alaska at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Senator DeBries?
Mr. Schneider, I have just two questions for you, sir. I don't read this as a licensing law. I read it as a contractor proposing the contractor's own plan to the department that, as I read it, that the plan be approved if it's within, if it is a safe plan within guidelines. Is there something I'm missing that makes you say that it's a contractor licensing statute?
It might be one of semantics, Senator, but I think what we're looking at here is we're dealing with the definition in the Bill of Competency. Whether you want to call it a license or a certification, you're going to have to be approved in order to do the work. Some people might call that a license. Some people might call it a certification.
Just as a business matter, I'm kind of curious because I would assume that your members would favor legislation that would help keep out JIPO fly-by-night operators coming to Alaska to do
public contracting work, and I don't sense that's your position here. That what am I do not understand about the economics of it that can that leads you to take this position from just a standpoint of what I just mentioned.
Well, in regards to the bill providing for the abatement work, of course, as I stated in the first part of my testimony, we're very much in favor of that. We're very much in favor of the abatement program overall. Getting back specifically to your question in regards to economics, the problem that you have here is one of lack of specificity. First of all, I haven't seen any of the guidelines that are proposed to be presented under Section 1820.030. Most of the other statutes that we deal with in the safety and health field, not only in construction, but the other businesses as well, are firmly established and fairly well documented. Here we're just a guideline. That's pretty vague. I think we could probably ask what those guidelines were going to entail. And as we work our way down to the certification, through the certification program, I think I know we don't have time here, but I've listed about 20 or 25 questions that would pop up. Obviously, one of the things that has been addressed here, one of the things that Mr. Freeman has addressed is that of the school districts. The way the bill is written, of course, is that not only would the employees of the contractor be certified before they did the work, of course, all the school officials would have to be as well, because as you pointed out, in terms of the conditions of the bill, it's anybody that does any type of salvage, encapsulation, removal, demolition, disposal, storage, and containment, and of course that applies very strictly, I would assume, to the maintenance people in the school facilities that are dealing with the asbestos-coated pipe. So here again, I think there's just a lot of questions that that haven't been addressed, and to sum it up, I would say it's a lack of specificity.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only other observation I'd make, and I could do this as a question to Mr. Freeman, but with respect to the Barton High School project, I would think that if there was a contract already let before the bill took effect, that it would be grandfathered or exempt effectively legislation. I don't know what your intent was, but I kind of see that as almost a constitutional. If that gives Mr. Freeman any comfort with the project he has described.
Yes, somewhat. I guess the fear was if it goes ahead and is passed right away, and our contract doesn't start until April, last part of April for the removal, that we could be in trouble. And maybe that fears are not warranted, I'm not sure.
To answer that specific question, there's a general retrospective statute, ASO 1.10.090, that states no statute is retrospective unless expressly declared therein. We have not expressly declared this to be retrospective. It's my intent that it not be retrospective and not apply to anything prior to the effective date of the act, whatever we decide that to be.
Thank you.
Senator DeVries.
Thank you. I don't have any question. I just apologize for being later with the chairman of Community and Regional Affairs teleconference also. Thank you.
We were pleased you were able to make it. Representative Collins.
Thank you. I have a question I'd like to refer to both you and Senator Josephson. Based on the information, I'm assuming that in reviewing the problem with asbestos, you looked at in terms of looking at the scope of the problem, merely as it relates to schools, not as it relates to, say, the state as a whole. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. The concern that I have is that children are my favorite thing, and I would literally favor any legislation that benefits children. But I have a concern if, as Mr. Catlin has indicated, that any exposure could cause a disease, might we not be better off by addressing the problem more globally and saying that if we can clear the air, say, in our public buildings and as many buildings as possible, I guess what I'm thinking of is if we go ahead and go to spend all of this money and all of this effort in the schools, that our children are still at risk. We have not really, if the risk is so high that one exposure can cause a problem, if there are still public buildings that they go to from their school, have you really accomplished anything for them? And I'm wondering if perhaps it might be better to address The problem, as Representative Boucher said, is just the tip of the iceberg. It affects not only children in Anchorage, but it affects really people all over the state of Alaska. And might we not be better off reserving our money and to take a broader approach to the problem? I have a question for Mr. Catlin and Dr. Thorne. Going back to Mr. Freeman's statement that the schools are presently safe, based on the air quality control that has been programmed and developed, and I'd like to know if there's any information available through any of their resources that would indicate the effectiveness of such programs on a long-term basis, and are there other states who have addressed the problem by perhaps treating the quality of the air rather than removal? And if either Mr. Catlin or Dr. Thorne could answer that question, I'd appreciate that.
First of all, Dr. Thorne, would you care to answer that, or would you like to defer to Mr. Catlin?
In looking at what levels have been approved in other schools that have been, could you clarify your question?
What I was saying is that we have an indication that there is a possibility that the problem can be managed by instituting some type of air control program, and I don't really know what that is. And I'm saying, I want to know, is there any data to let us know how effective those programs are? And are they effective enough to the degree that that is an option that other states have pursued rather than removal of the asbestos?
If you're looking for end stage data as far as the effect on the health, we won't see that for 30 or 40 years. If you're looking for data that we have at low levels, are significant exposure, a significant effect on health, low levels of asbestos fiber exposure and inspiration are a significant effect on health. Yes, I think we do have that data, and our present standard does not protect against those health effects. I think that there has been encapsulation in certain schools. It may be too early to tell what kind of effect that has. If you, for example, decide that the school has outlived its usefulness and you decide to retire a school and you want to demolish it and build a new one in its place, you still have to remove the asbestos before you can totally disable the building. In those situations, the encapsulation is very difficult to remove, often has to be removed in a dry form. Mm-hmm. And in those situations, there's a possibility of future entrainment in the air. Mm-hmm. Encapsulation, which might be successful in the schools at this point in time, may not be successful in 7 to 8 years when the life of the material has elapsed and it too will begin to disintegrate like some of the asbestos that is in place now. Mm-hmm. Most of the asbestos that was put in place in most of our school buildings when it was originally put in place was probably in a very firm form and not likely to flake off into the air. Mm-hmm. The reason it starts flaking off into the air is because it's water damaged, because it becomes more friable with age, or because it has to be cut into to repair parts of the building or pipes mm-hmm. or so on. Mm-hmm. So that it's difficult to assess what the present effectiveness of encapsulation is at this point in time. Mm-hmm. The information, one of the things that has to be kept in mind is that it is important to monitor encapsulated asbestos over a period of time for signs of decay. Mm-hmm. Also, when you put encapsulation on asbestos, it often can cause the asbestos material to delaminate off if it's not firm enough to hold the encapsulant on. So that in some situations, it may create a worse situation. There's a whole technology of encapsulation. In certain situations, it's applicable. In other situations, it is not. And the long-term effectiveness cost-benefit ratio really needs expert consideration. My main concern with the appropriation of money that is here is that we really prioritize which asbestos we take out, because there is probably more asbestos out there than this bill would possibly cover. And my suggestion as an advocate for health in the state is that we earmark the asbestos of highest priority mm-hmm. and take that out immediately.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say, you just kind of reaffirm my concern that the schools in Anchorage aren't safe. And that's why I asked that question, and I'm really concerned about that, and I would challenge Mr. Freeman or anybody to come out and prove to me that those schools are actually safe. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Collins
also had a question directed to us, I think, regarding which you answered in part, or maybe fully, about looking at other public facilities. Last year, when this matter came up before the Senate Finance Committee, Senator Sackett expressed interest in knowing about all public facilities with asbestos and asked the administration to take inventory of that. And I don't know what the results of all of that would be, but that we should be looking for reports from the administration in response to Senator Sackett's request.
Representative Pierce. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to echo Representative Collins and Representative Boucher's thoughts that this might be the tip of an iceberg, and suggest that this is the best place, priority-wise, to start. Also, I had a question as to how thorough and therefore successful program on the scale of Bartlett can be, if there's some empirical evidence. It was stated that this was the largest program or abatement removal to date, and I'm just wondering if it's going to, or whether at this cost, future we'll before the life of the school comes to date, then that we would have to spend more money perhaps on this scale again in order to remove the whatever else is existing.
No, but I think, if I might, I also understand that one of the issues in encapsulation is that nobody really knows what the toxic contents of the materials used in that process might be. I mean, I read an article suggesting that it might be 7 or 10 years before we would know whether that material has it. Do you know what I'm trying to say? The material used in encapsulating asbestos.
I'm not really in a position to comment, as you say, on the encapsulant materials. I think that perhaps if we were to take a look at the encapsulant contents and look at the toxicology of the chemicals and the agents used, that we might understand better what health effects we were likely to predict. I do understand that many of them do contain solvents, and the insolvents in general have an effect on the nervous system, especially the central nervous system, and overexposures could have an impact on brain function of the workers who were applying it if they weren't protected adequately from a respiratory standpoint. However, they could be protected as very much as the asbestos removers could be protected with air-supplied respirators. The rest of the contents of the encapsulants I'm unaware of, so I could not comment on.
Representative Navarre, did you have other questions?
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pass before, but I didn't really have any questions for the witnesses today. I do have some brief statements, however. I haven't had time to peruse all this material, but I certainly shall, and it is for a sensitive subject. But I'd like to respond in part to Representative Collins' concern, and first voiced by Representative Boucher about the tip of the iceberg. While I certainly don't want to diminish the importance of the rest of the public buildings, who certainly do have a similar problem, this particular bill is by design specifically for schools. And I, for one, would not want to continue to have the children of school districts that have complied and have done their surveys continue to be at risk because of the districts that haven't. One of the distressing things about working in education, as an educator, and I trust my years on the school board and as a teacher still qualifies me in that respect, is that frankly some school districts don't have their act together. This information is that all schools in the USA, and I believe we qualify in that respect, were supposed to have been tested by June 30, 1983, and at present apparently there are still